Mr. Witt, you're arguing against a chair.
This is, I'll make a political analogy, but maybe I should. I think that line's been used before.
Probably so. If you'll just give us a minute to let folks in the back of the room.
Sure.
We don't want to start till they close the doors. Okay, Mr. Witt, come on up to the podium. You have 15 minutes. I would ask you if you want to reserve any time for rebuttal, but
this is the first time I've said no to that.
That's it. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, we're happy to see you in court.
Thank you, Your Honor. I represent Riverside Regional Jail in this workers' compensation claim. The issue today is whether the claimant met her burden of proving an injury by accident.
Let me stop you right there and ask you one very simple question.
Sure.
Given the Virginia Supreme Court's fairly recent decision in Cone versus Marquis, why doesn't that support the commission's decision in this case?
Cone is completely irrelevant to this case because the parties in Cone stipulated and agreed that there was an injury by accident. What the issue was in Cone was whether there was approximate cause between the incident or the accident and the ultimate injuries that were sustained. So if you look at Cone very carefully, the court said they stipulated an injury by accident. What they argued was that accident didn't cause the injuries. Rather, many accidents over a long period of time caused the injuries.
Well, here the commission.
And here the issue that's not stipulated, that is clearly contested, is whether the legal elements established by decades of Supreme Court law have been met. And they clearly have not.
You typically stipulate the facts, not law. And I think you are correct in Coney, stipulated as to certain facts, which fairly well defined what law was to be applied. Here, we don't have that stipulation, but we do have some factual findings by the commission that we are bound by, if the evidence supports them, which it seems to me we get kind of to the same place. I mean, like in Cone, we have a law enforcement officer of sorts who's undergoing training as part of their job, and that training involves rather strenuous physical activity, defensive training, and you get struck, and she was struck in this case. I don't think anybody's disputing that. I think the issue really is, was that activity the proximate cause of the injury? And was it sufficiently defined? Was it a sufficiently defined event, I guess? Is that sort of what you're getting at here?
I think they're apples and oranges, if I might, Your Honor. Cone involved in training, blows to the head. And in Cone, there was a final blow, as you would expect, and the claimant goes down. Clearly, that can be considered an injury by accident, identifiable incident occurring at a reasonably definite time with rigid temporal precision. It would be like an assault case more. If you have an assault case.
But in Cone, there were a number of blows. Obviously, there was a final blow, but I don't think the record is clear, at least on my reading of the opinion. I don't have the actual record before me, but my reading of the Cone opinion, it isn't clear that final blow was necessarily the blow that caused the comatose condition
The record just says the claimant was struck multiple times after the last blow, the claimant went down. The problem with Cone is it was a causation case. It was not where the elements of an injury by accident met. The party stipulated that the elements of an injury by accident had been met. The issue before the Supreme Court was whether that series of blows on that one day were the proximate cause, ultimately, of the injuries and the death of the individual. Here, we are contesting whether the elements of an injury by accident have been met, and they clearly have not been met. There's no identifiable incident bounded by rigid temporal precision.
Well, I guess the question is, how rigid does it have to be?
Well, that's,
in Cone, as I said, it isn't clear, really, as far as I can discern at least, it isn't clear which of the many blows necessarily resulted, or whether it was a combination of all the blows that resulted in the physical impairment.
Supreme Court didn't have to address that issue,
no,
and in fact didn't address that issue.
But well, they certainly did indirectly, because they cited to it in the opinion. In other words, on the face of it, it seems we've got a very similar situation here. I mean, the similarities, in fact, to me, are very striking. You know, we have a correctional officer. She's undergoing training. She wasn't injured prior to the training. She wasn't suffering any physical disability of any sort prior to the training, at least from the record we have before us. She undergoes this training where she's thrown around during the course of a day, at the end of which, you know, now we have a problem. The commission found that to be, at least as a fact, it found it to be sufficiently identifiable in terms of what you describe as a temporal
rigid temporal precision.
Thank you. With sufficient temporal precision, how are we to say as a matter of law they're wrong about that?
Because the Supreme Court has said they're wrong. If you look at the history of the definition of injury by accident, and it goes back to the 1940s, it's identifiable incident occurring at a reasonably definite time with rigid temporal precision. That meant a specific incident had to have taken place. We're talking about a matter of seconds or minutes. In Bradley versus Philip Morris, the Court of Appeals in 1985 expanded the temporal period for which an accident can occur to an event lasting 3 hours. The Supreme Court, 4 years later, in Morris v. Morris, overturned that, in essence.
What about the Van Buren case? How do you distinguish the Van Buren case?
Well, I figured you were going to ask me that, Judge. I know you sat on that panel. Van Buren dealt with a unique set of facts. In Van Buren, we were dealing with a rescue. We were dealing with a public safety employee or officer, firefighter. We were dealing with a relatively short period of time, 45 minutes, not 4 hours. We were dealing with clearly no repetition of movement that we could discern, a variety of things. And then I think most importantly, in this court in Kim versus Roto-Rooter this year, characterized Van Buren and said most importantly about Van Buren, it established a first responder exception to the requirement that an injured worker pinpoint the precise time and event that an injury occurred.
But isn't a correctional officer a public safety officer?
But there's no emergency. There was no adrenaline
rush. But this is
required
training, and we're talking about repeated episodes of being thrown around, and I mean, all of that training is to enable that officer to appropriately ensure public safety within the jail.
What the court said in Van Buren was, in essence, prevented from pinpointing a precise moment or activity because there was yelling, hollering, there was noise, there was this adrenaline rush going on that only when it subsided did the firefighter realize that he had been injured, and they created that exception. Here, there's no evidence of adrenaline rush, there's no evidence of noise, chaotic activity. There's nothing in the record that indicates this particular claimant was prevented from pinpointing the exact nature or time or event or movement when the injury occurred. And that's absolutely required, because if it weren't required, this court in Van Buren wouldn't have had the need to create an exception to that rule.
Well, let me take an exception to the exception, because I think it's unfortunate that Van Buren, frankly, uses the term exception. because I don't think the courts can create exceptions. I think only the legislature can do that. But I think that the point of Van Buren, though, is to emphasize the nature of the activity that public safety officers, you know, engage in on a day-to-day basis. It's very unusual as compared to folks in other occupations. And I think that plays into what we have here. I mean, it's generally not part of the average job to get thrown all over a room and learn defensive combat, you know, tactics so that a prison inmate doesn't overpower you and escape. And that's what was going on here. So I think while Van Buren does use language that seems to suggest it's creating a sort of a public safety exception, I really think that's unfortunate, frankly, and really the distinction is not based on the judicial fiat of creating something that only the legislature can do. It's just simply drawing a distinction that exists in a unique set of, you know, a unique category of occupation.
Attempts have been made to expand identifiable incident to periods lasting hours, and the Supreme Court absolutely rejected that. The Court of Appeals did it in Bradley versus Philip Morris. Listen to what the Supreme Court said 4 years later.
Are you quoting from Morris?
I am quoting from Morris. We reject the reasoning contained in the dictum in Bradley. In determining that the requirement of an identifiable incident did not mean an event bounded with rigid temporal precision, but rather meant a work activity within a reasonably discrete time frame, the Court of Appeals misinterpreted Saunders. The courts and the commission have from time to time, the lower courts, have attempted to expand in interpreting the law as to injury by accident. Supreme Court, at every turn, has said no. 2-3 hours is simply too much and has rejected that notion. We're on very, if you will, expansive ground here. We're dealing with not minutes. We're dealing with something that lasted hours with absolutely no identifiable incident. It was only following the entire event, the entire training that morning.
So let me ask you this.
That the claimant first felt any symptoms.
Okay. Yes. Let me ask you this. So if in the middle of this training, she felt her knee pop, and that's what the record shows, would you be here arguing today?
I would not. We would be. We wouldn't have litigated that.
Okay. So your whole issue is based on her not being able to identify until right after the extended training.
Well, more than that. She didn't feel anything until after. But more importantly, even afterwards, she couldn't go back and pinpoint, well, I got thrown, my knee or ankle twisted, or I felt pain when I did a particular movement, or something specific and narrow. The evidence is completely devoid, really, of what she was doing. We sort of have a vague idea of some moves that appeared to be repeated in a rotation, so there's an element of repetition. The exact nature and extent is a little unclear because we're dealing with a paragraph about two sentences long that where she described what happened, and that's the entire record. It is very, very, very sparse. In Van Buren, we had an extensive record of what the firefighter did and didn't do and how he had to maneuver with little, if any, repetition. Here, she implies repetition. She implies multiple moves in a rotational fashion. It's not entirely clear how much repetition, but there was some. That distinguishes this from Van Buren, and we're very close to cumulative trauma and repetitive activity on top of her not being able to identify a specific incident. We're redefining. If we award this claim, I think the court is completely redefining decades of Supreme Court law that limits what an identifiable incident has. We're right back to 1985. We're right back to Bradley versus Philip Morris, where this court expanded identifiable incident to 3 hours, and the Supreme Court 4 years later absolutely rejected that notion. And for those reasons, Your Honor, we ask that the opinion of the full commission be reversed.
Thank you, counsel. We'll be down to greet.